Hello, and welcome to the Popmatic Podcast. I'm Brian.
And I'm Crystal. We're librarians at Nashville Public Library.
This podcast is where you can find reviews and recommendations of the best books, movies, and music available for checkout from the Popular Materials Department of the Nashville Public Library.
You can also learn about library programs such as concerts, film screenings, book clubs, author talks, and book signings.
This episode, Crystal and I have music reviews of Tanarawen and Bang on a Can. Julie and Amanda feature fiction titles by Sarah Bird and Nicholas Sparks. Then Bill and Crystal will turn you on to some great movies that you may have missed. I'm Not Scared, and What Did You Do in the War, Daddy? This is where we talk about music that we like.
I can't believe you listened to that.
Hi, this is Crystal. Nashville Public Library celebrates being a community of many faces every November, and we are pleased to have in our collection amazing music from around the world. The CD I'm about to highlight is just one of the many, so go to your local library and make a musical discovery. First, a little background about the band whose name is Tanarawen and how they came to be. The Tuaregs have lived as nomads in the Sahara for hundreds of years. In the 1960s, the newly created African nations of Mali, Chad, among others, didn't know how to handle the nomads. The Malian Tuaregs rose in rebellion against restrictions on their lifestyle, but were crushed by the new government. Then severe drought forced many to migrate to the other side of the Sahara to live in refugee and military training camps in Algeria and Libya. It is in those camps the future band members of Tanarawen met and were exposed to the sounds of Western music icons such as Hendrix, Marley, and Dylan. Tanarawen formed an ensemble that created a new musical tradition, trading in their traditional lutes and shepherd's flutes for electric guitars. In 2004, Tanarawen released a record called Amasa Cool. The lyrics often speak of political awakening, exile, and the repression of their people. Let's listen to a clip from the first track. The English translation of the title is The Traveler in the Desert. Song grooves like the ever-changing waves in the desert sand. I now read an excerpt of the translated lyrics of this song. In the desert, flat and empty, where nothing is given, my head is alert, awake. I have climbed up and climbed down the mountains where I was born. I know in which caves the water is hidden. These worries are my friends. Though it's hard to describe this record, I call it bluesy, call-and-response folk rock, with a dash of ancient melodic tradition. So I'll leave you with the last track on the album, which is a beautiful droning tone poem called Asul. We also have Tanarawen's 2007 release called Water is Life. So grab your library card, you know what to do.
And now for something completely different. I want to revisit Handel's Messiah and hopefully give you a fresh angle on this holiday staple. Just kidding. But I am going to talk about an oratorio, a collaboration between an avant-garde collective, a purist Baroque chamber ensemble, and one of the world's most famous DJs. I'm speaking now of Bang on a Can's Lost Objects. Bang on a Can are a collective of composer and performers conceived by Michael Gordon, Julia Wolf, and David Lang. Bang on a Can and friends have reinterpreted much of the forward-thinking classical and popular canon on record or during their eponymous Bang on a Can festival. For Lost Objects, they recruited Deborah Artman to write a libretto concerning all things lost. Each section features a different lost item. lost socks, lost species, lost modes of communication, lost children, the loss of animal sacrifice and religious rituals. The section Forward, Forward, Please Look concerns lost children. Vocal duties are performed by the RIAS Chamber Choir, one of Berlin's most highly regarded troupes. Bang on a Can enlisted Baroque ensemble Concerto Köln to provide instrumentation. Concerto Köln only use period-specific instruments which are tuned to a lower pitch but provide a wider array of timbres. Rounding out this motley crew are the members of Bang on a Can and Friends who play the accoutrements of popular music, drums, electric guitars, and keyboards. Between thematic sections, DJ Spooky provides remixes of the tracks you've just heard. The results are minimalist, but not academic. Big, clear melodies soar, and simple, militaristic percussion drives it all home. What really makes Lost Objects are the rock touches, the staccato guitar, and short length of the pieces. We hear the guitar punctuations on Not Our Darkness, Loss of Meaning. The brevity of the entire composition saves it from the doldrums where most oratorios go to die. The melodic statements don't lose their energy or crumble under the emotional weight of the libretto. Lost Objects is a rare example of postmodern art music that is listenable and emotionally engaging without pandering to folkisms. Valleys made plain indeed. The library has lots of other Bang on a Can recordings too, so make sure you check those out. So Crystal, who's rocking the popular materials department this month?
On Saturday, December 6th at 11 a.m. at the main library in the Author's Corner of the Popular Materials Department, join us for a special performance by the Contrarian Ensemble as they perform dance hits composed from the 1300s to the present.
I can't believe you read that.
This is Julie, and I recently listened to the Yokota Officers Club by Sarah Bird and can enthusiastically recommend it. Sarah Bird grew up in an Air Force family of eight and attended five different schools in the fifth grade alone. This is the story of an American family stationed at air bases in Japan during the 50s and early 60s and is told by one of the six children, Bernie. Her deadpan description of the bizarre unreality of the life of a military family is both hilarious and touching. The story swings back and forth between the present and events from Bernie's childhood. The insularity of life on military bases, the hardships faced by Air Force wives, and the effects of the foreign military presence on the Japanese people are brought home through anecdotes that are probably based on the author's own life. I especially enjoyed all the references to the culture of the early 60s, like white go-go boots, taboo perfume, up with people, and stick-on daisies. If you were an American kid during that period, this book will give you flashbacks of things you thought you'd forgotten. When the book begins, it's the early 60s, and Bernie has returned to Japan from her first year at college in the U.S. to spend the summer with her quirky family. Here's the scene where her family picks her up at the airport. My father drops my suitcase beside our car and turns to me. He has his hand extended out like a Roman senator about to deliver an oration. Time? My father wears the aviator's watch he'd been issued at flight school at Kelly Air Force Base in San Antonio, the watch he wore while he co-piloted planes through World War II, the Korean War, the Cold War. Once a month, with ceremonial gravity, he calls the atomic clock to nudge the instrument 1 or 2 seconds into keeping with Greenwich Mean Time. Synchronize! We all bend our heads over our watches. Synchronize! I pull out the stem on my Seiko and wait until my father announces, I make it 2,300 hours and 33 minutes in. We all move the minute hands of our watches to that position. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Now, all 8 of us snap our stems down on the exact same second. I set my watch and fall back into time with my family. At the base, Bernie soon realizes that while it's all so familiar, a drastic change has taken place. Her parents' marriage has deteriorated significantly, affecting all of her siblings in different ways. Being back in Japan evokes a lot of memories for her, especially a longing for their beloved servant, Fumiko, who was suddenly banished from the family for unexplained reasons when Bernie was a child. A series of events reconnects the two, and Fumiko eventually reveals the dramatic secret of what happened so many years ago, the root of her parents' discord. When I finished this book, the voices of the characters echoed in my head for several weeks. Sarah Bird is a talented writer, and I think her other novels are probably pretty good, too. Amanda, what have you been reading?
Well, some people prefer to read heavy books like complex Russian novels or dark post-apocalyptic narratives. I'm not one of those people. But if you are, then rock on with your Tolstoy-loving self. If I wanted to be upset, I'd try to buy gas or cash in what's left of my mutual fund. Seriously. For me, reading is a form of escapist entertainment, and one of my favorite authors to pull out when I just want a quick, relaxing read is Nicholas Sparks. Sparks has written 12 novels and one nonfiction work over the years, and I've read all of them so far except the nonfiction book, and that one is sitting on my to-be-read pile. 4 of his books have been made into films. See A Message in a Bottle, A Walk to Remember, and The Notebook. The latest film, Knights in Rodanthe, just hit theaters this past September. It seems like Sparks' novels tend to follow a pattern for me. I usually enjoy every other book. For example, while I liked his most recent novel, The Lucky One, I really got into the one he published before that called The Choice. The storyline was based on two neighbors and their dogs, with well-written characters and a believable, if not overly deep, plot. Now, I am not normally a crier, but there is some mysterious Sparksian quality that can really turn on the waterworks, so I tend to rank his books by the number of Kleenexes needed. A Walk to Remember was a 5 Kleenexer. The Choice, I would have to say, comes in at about 1.5 Kleenexes. It's sad in parts, especially when the exact choice to be made is revealed, but not unbearably so. Okay, if you're thinking, but Amanda, I've already read everything Nicholas Sparks has written. What else you got? Never fear. I have a few suggestions for your continued light reading pleasure. If you read Sparks because of his depictions of relaxed coastal living, then might I also recommend Dorothea Benton Frank or Ann River Siddons. Or, if you like books like this one because of their chick-litty nature, then I'm going to suggest you try Susan Elizabeth Phillips or Debbie McComber. These authors are very prolific, and there should be enough books to keep you busy at least until next month, when we can get back to you with more podcastic reviews. So hit your local library and check out The Choice from the ironically titled King of Chick Lit, because odds are they're probably going to make it into a movie sooner than later, and then you can impress all your friends by telling them that you read the book way back when. Hey Julie, did you want to mention an upcoming author event?
Yes, I do. Author Ann Patchett will be appearing at the main library to read for the Adult Short Story Hour at noon on Thursday, December 18th. She will be reading from her book, What Now? And we encourage everyone to come listen and bring a lunch if you'd like.
I can't believe you watched that.
This is Bill. Have you been disappointed, as I have, by the rash of mediocre comedies coming out of Hollywood? Superbad and Pineapple Express are perfect examples. Allow me to recommend this sadly overlooked gem from 1966. It's called What Did You Do in the War, Daddy? A superb piece of World War II anarchy directed by Blake Edwards of Pink Panther fame, and the movie was written by William Peter Blatty, who is best known for his novel The Exorcist. One of the most intriguing aspects of What Did You Do in the War, Daddy? Is the casting. With the exception of Dick Shawn, and the rest of the cast at that time was mainly noted for being dramatic actors. James Coburn, Aldo Ray, Harry Morgan, Carol O'Connor were not noted for their comedic talents. Now, some of you are saying, hold on there, Bill. Carol O'Connor played Archie Bunker in All of the Family, and Harry Morgan was on MASH, both comedies. True, but this movie was made in 1966, way before those two television series were on the air. The director, Blake Edwards, demonstrates his keen eye for casting. Another nice aspect to this DVD is that it's presented in letterbox, so you can get the full impact of the cinematography. So check out What Did You Do in the War, Daddy, and enjoy. That's an order, soldier. So, Crystal, what's in your DVD player?
Well, after winding down from Thursday Nights of Terror, I've gone back to one of my favorite genres, the coming-of-age tale. If you enjoy movies like Stand By Me or Walkabout, the film I'm about to review is definitely for you. I'm Not Scared is the story of 10-year-old boy Mikkel, who lives in southern Italy with his parents and little sister in a run-down little town. Mikkel and his friends spend their time exploring the countryside and riding their bicycles. There are beautiful scenes of the kids running in the wheat fields. On one of their adventures, the kids discover an abandoned house. After Mikkel's little sister leaves her glasses there, he goes back to retrieve them. He discovers a pit with what he thinks is a dead body. Mikkel races away, BMX style, but can't stay away for long. When he returns, Mikkel discovers it's no body, but a little boy. Instead of telling his parents, Mikkel accepts this situation and relishes in his secret. He's at the age when he has glimmers of understanding about adult life, but still lives within the bounds of childhood logic. Filippo, the captive little boy, has lost all hope and actually thinks he's dead. The viewer discovers, before Mikkel, that Filippo has been kidnapped by his father and cronies, hoping to make it big on ransom money. Mikkel pieces the clues together after eavesdropping on the adult conversations, then understands that Filippo could be murdered unless he alone saves him. I'm Not Scared is beautiful to look at, with a pace like the world of a child in the summertime. It is directed by Gabriel Salvatores, whom you may know for his Oscar-winning film Mediterraneo. It is in Italian with English subtitles, but don't let that scare you away from I'm Not Scared, a thrilling coming-of-age tale. And now, Bill and I are going to tell you about some great movie events we've got coming up in December.
At our Movies at Main on Thursday, December 11th at 5:30 p.m., get in the holiday spirit, Tim Burton style, as we present Nightmare Before Christmas, projected from the DVD onto the big screen at the Main Library.
And then join us on Saturday, December 13th, 2 p.m., again at the Main Library in our great auditorium, for a holiday screening of Ernest Saves Christmas, with actor Bill Burge present to share fond memories of making the movie right here in Tennessee. A light reception in Bill's honor will follow after the event. You've been listening to Nashville Public Library's Pop-Matic Podcast. For more information, please visit library.nashville.org.
That's on the interweb.